Good morning. Well, guess what? It's no time to kick off this conversation. Half an hour is not enough time. I'm putting that out right now. With a woman with such extensive profile under her belt, I can't fit all of that into one half hour this morning. So we're going to have to settle on something we really want to talk about, and we're going to have to stick to that. Good morning, Fiona. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am blessed, and I'm happy to have you on board because, I've been trying to reach out for the longest while. I thought, I'm so impressed by you. I'm impressed by your advocacy. I'm impressed by the person, your nature, the things that you're passionate about, and the things that you don't just passionate about it, but you're actually doing something about it. So you have impressed me from day one, and I really, really wanted to have you on the show. So it's such an honor to have you this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Well, you're doing a very good job of making my head get big.
Big head, yo! You see, and that is what freaks me out, you know. You are so humble in all of this. You don't even understand how much you're impressing us out here, you know. And that's good. That's great. That's absolutely
Thank
really
you
great.
Thank you very much.
Fee, let's just get right into the conversation. I think everybody by now knows you're the daughter of the father of the soil, of course, which is John Compton. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your growing up, because a lot of people may not be able to put it together. They probably thought, oh, well, they were always in this well-to-do family. But I happen to know that this is not how Daddy grew you all up at all. You all really did grow up very humble and never grew with that sort of authority and feels that, you know, you were, what's the word? This sort of privileged sort of behavior. Yeah. Daddy made sure you all understand you all had to work for what you all wanted. So tell us about that upbringing and how it is helping
Absolutely.
You today.
The thing is, when you look at that, you have to look at my father's background growing up, because my father was born in Kanawon, which is, I think Kanawon only has about 400 people on the island now. So if you think about when my father, who was born in 1926, how many people they had on that island. The island was very small.
Yeah.
You know, and my father grew up in a very small, like when we went and we saw, you know, the very small wooden house my father grew up in, it did really help to give me perspective as to why he would treat us the way in how we carry ourselves and how he carried himself.
Right.
Because, you know, for many people, normally they used to see my father in his old farming clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he never used to like to have security or outriders or all of those kind of things.
Right.
And, you know, the reason why is because my father had a very good relationship with the soil and with the sea. Mm-hmm. My father, when he was stressed out or when he had to think about, you know, things around the country, he would go to Maho, he would plant his hands in the soil, he would connect with the earth, he would connect with the river, that is where he, if you are a person of the soil, you are connected to that,
mm-hmm.
then therefore you'll always have a love and connection with your people. So you'd never think that you are above anyone else
right.
if you have that connection. And, you know, my father, the thing is, it's, people used to make assumptions about our family mm-hmm. before speaking to us, or think that we had to be treated a certain way mm-hmm. with others even demanding that treatment. So sometimes we'd walk into a space and people would make all of this fuss and this hype.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, but we didn't ask for that. You know?
Right.
So it's those assumptions as well. But, you know, I think when my sister Janine has an amazing story which encompasses my father. And when she was young, she must have been about 11, and she says, "Oh, Daddy, why don't I have a diplomatic passport?"
Mm.
And my father said, "Well, who are you?" And she says, "Well, I'm Janine."
Wow.
And he said, "No, but who are you? What have you done for the country mm-hmm. to make you think you are deserving of having a diplomatic passport?"
Wow.
So even though we were the prime minister's children for so long, we never had diplomatic passports. We never thought that we had that entitlement
yes.
of having those privileges, because we did not contribute to the country in that way to be deserving of those diplomatic passports. And that's just my father.
Wow.
And I think, you know, that just shows, you know, he never made us think that we were entitled
right.
just because we were the prime minister's children or anything like that. So it was really, really important in terms of It has shaped me every single day. My father continues to teach me, and his what I've learned from him has really shaped like myself today.
Right, and it shows. It really, really does show. At any point in time, did any of the children decide they wanted to rebel and say, "Well, why are you, you know, like wanted to demand that? Listen, man, give us a little something here to work with." You know, it was never like that.
I mean, all of us went through our teenage rebellion stages, you know, in terms of wanting to be different, wanting to cut away from, you know, the public eye and those kind of things like that, but never in a sense of demanding more than we felt we deserved or anything like that.
Right, so that you was well-grounded in you guys. That was well-grounded.
Yeah,
it was not
think,
something of debate.
I think, you know, the thing is, my father led from example. He didn't have to be saying, oh, you need to be humble, you need to be humble.
Right.
It's because you wake up in the morning, you see the prime minister, he's making his own juice.
Right.
He's there digging, dashing himself. He's
right.
doing, you know, he's always in dirty clothes, and you're seeing that humility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he'd never come home and talk about all the great things that he's done.
Right.
We'd only find out from other people, oh, you know, your father did this. I say, really?
Right.
So when my father passed away, that is when we found out the most things about my father.
Mm-hmm.
People would come and tell us stories. Do you know your father paid for my school fees? Do you know my father did this?
Wow.
And I'm like, we didn't know because he never spoke about it. So I think it's not about him having to drill it in us,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, through speeches or lectures. It was just, he just led by example.
And do you think that contributed to the person that you are today in terms of the advocacy, the things that you want to leave on this world? You know, the fact that you have that powerful, innate passion to ensure that we understand who we are as a people and to embrace that in every form of the word.
Absolutely. I think my father never encouraged us to join in politics or never forced our hand in taking any specific path.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of just seeing how my father was very gently passionate, and my mother as well, everyone has their ways of doing advocacy in various ways. Some people are creative, they make art. Some people are singers. Some people are actors. Some people are lawyers or doctors or whatever. Everyone has their own way
mm-hmm.
of contributing to society in a positive way. So, you know, having, you know, both of my parents doing it in their own respective ways very much helped shape me, because in many ways I'm not like my father. I'm very artsy. I'm very brightly colored.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very I don't know. I like carnival and whining and, you know, wearing short shorts and it is, you know, very much not like my father, but in many ways I am.
You are
and
your father.
Understanding.
You are your
yeah,
father.
But it's doing it in my own way.
Your way.
I am Fiona. Yes,
right.
I am the daughter of Sir John, but I am also Fiona, and I find my own ways to contribute into society in my own way. And I think what's important is that my father never forced our hand.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, it comes to his leading by example and you just having a natural passion for your own people. You know, when I used to drive with my father, he would, like, he'd just say, oh, we need to fix that gate. Oh, okay, you know what? This field needs some lights, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know what? I need to speak to Wasa about those pipes.
Yeah.
And he'd just be driving through St. Lucia, looking at how to improve it, how to fix it. He wasn't quarreling and saying, oh, these people haven't done enough, or, you know, pointing fingers or placing blame. He was just saying, okay, this needs to be done.
Right, right.
And, you know, it was just in that way. He was never forceful.
Right.
But it was just, he just had a focus on improving, how to make things better, and doing so without pointing fingers at other people.
Right, right. He made it his business to be on the ground and see for himself and observe by himself, and so he could have effected the change. And a lot of people don't understand that. And that was very unique and beautiful. I tell you what, Fee, we're coming back, and when we come back, we're going to talk about where you're at right now, some of the things that you're challenging right now, some of the things that you're into, and, you know, just get into that. We'll come back. We'll take a word from our sponsors.
No problem.
We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution, building our future today. We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution, with you every step of the way. Always there for you, serving you and me. The St. Lucian way, we like family. Always there for you, helping you and me. B-O-S-L, no say for me. St. Lucia, for every St. Lucia.
Solution, Bank of St. Lucia. All the bank you need.
And if you're just joining us, welcome aboard. This is Radio Caribbean International. She speaks as a Tuesday, and we've got Fiona Compton in our company today. Very privileged to have her. Fee, you went on to study photography. That was the first thing? Was it the first after you left school? What was you like in school, though? What were you, quiet or just a regular school girl?
So in primary school, I was a bit of a geek. So I used to read a lot. Mm. And I used to open encyclopedias and read it.
Wow.
So I was very, and my friends used to make fun of me, like some of my friends from school who, you know, I went to Sanssouci.
Mm-hmm.
That I went to Sanssouci with, they used to laugh, they laugh at me and I was just, you know, you're such a geek, you're so annoying.
Oh.
And you know, I was very quiet. And you know, I did well in common entrance and stuff, and I went to convent and I got to convent and I was still very quiet. I think sometimes when everyone is looking at you, it makes you go more into yourself because you're so self-conscious that everyone is looking at you. Oh, look at Compton's daughter and stuff. So you kind of become very self-conscious.
Right.
But then I grew out of that. I found like a good, you know, team of friends, and you know they brought a lot of good things out of me for me to become more confident and to kind of start believing in myself more. And I think that's really important, to have good people around you who bring out the best in you, not make you feel bad about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I kind of just slowly, I think by the time I reached form five, I became quite outgoing. And then after that, I went to Venezuela for a year as an exchange student. And that was difficult because I'd never been away from my family, and of course I was in a country I didn't speak the language, and that was hard. I think the first few months I used to cry every day, and listen to sad music and everything. But it's going through that difficult time, because this is the time before WhatsApp, before Facebook, before email.
Connecting was a lot more difficult.
Yes, I had to write, like, handwrite letters and post it.
Oh gosh!
So you know. So I had to learn the hard way to come out of my shell and really push myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a massive learning curve for me, because I was really pushed outside of my comfort zone. A completely different culture, different language, and there was no other Caribbean people around, you know, so I had to really, really push myself. So I think that also helped me become a bit more fearless.
Right. And from there, what happened then? When did you realize that you were heading into that arts department? Was it always there, or where did you figure it out?
No. Actually, when I did art. I did art for CXC, and I got a free, so I didn't do very well in art.
Imagine that.
So I think it's also a lesson for all of the artists out there who maybe did not do well in art at school. Art is subjective, and I don't think you should let a grade decide your future with your creativity. You know, there's so much that you can do and grow from. And then, so I just persevered with it. And then after that, I moved to England, and that was also really helpful to help open and broaden my horizons. But I think, remember, I'm showing my age, eh? This is before the internet was, where you had so much access, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want people to think that you essentially have to move to England to have to be exposed to good art or to good training right now. Like, Google is like your very, very best friend.
Right.
So much of what I learned so much more from the internet than I ever did in art school. Because you have so much access now to everything.
Right.
And, you know, but at the time for me, that is what helped me to, you know, I was around people from Korea. I met, you know, it was the very first time meeting people from Nigeria.
Right.
It was just, you know, so you get to learn so much about the world, and it opens your eyes way, way more. So that was very helpful. But, you know, we have access to all of that. Now the tip of our fingers. If I say I want to look at artwork from, say, Guinea-Bissau, I could Google it, and I will be given like a whole wealth of information about artists from that country. So, you know, we can really kind of expand. We have so much how we can expand ourselves now. So.
Right. Through your arts and you connecting in these ways, you have been very, very instrumental. You found, and this is a gift, because I don't think everybody can do that. The way that you have used your art and merge it into, you know, creating that sort of awareness, I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think it's unique, because I don't think everybody understands. And I know you know it's unique. Well, I'm hoping you know it's unique, because you now make, what you do now is that you make it so much more palatable for people who probably would have not had an interest in such topics. We are now able, you are now able to make it very colorful and very exciting. So we are now able to take it in. This is a gift. Are you aware? That's what you're doing.
Every single creative out there, we're always fighting ourselves down and always think our work is not good enough. So, and then we always, it's very hard for us to validate ourselves, because we're constantly critiquing ourselves and never think it's good enough. But in terms of what you said about, in terms of making things colorful and palatable, that's exactly what I wanted to do. So when I tried things like, say, they're not asking for it, mm-hmm. campaign, which was about, you know,
that was a beautiful,
you know,
campaign.
Against the men. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And mm-hmm. I really want to revamp it.
I thought I was looking for it, and I thought, where is it? You know, because I'm seeing.
Yes, you know what?
You need to.
I just been pulled in so many different directions. But even with that, that's a very heavy topic, and people try to avoid it because it's very uncomfortable. And because we have witnessed it, some of us have experienced it, mm-hmm. and, you know, this is a thing that makes people very uncomfortable. But I said, how can I really open the dialogue and the discussion? And that's how, not asking for it is an example of how I wanted to make, you know, social activism something that's palatable and engaging.
Right.
And then, you know, moving on with things like Know Your Caribbean, which is the other platform I run, on Instagram, which is doing really well, mm-hmm. is that I started to learn things about our history. So, for example, the Negma War, like when we grew up, like in school, the Negma War, you barely spoke about them, mm-hmm. right? And then to find out, like, how instrumental they were in, you know, giving St. Lucia freedom for more than 3 years during the heights of slavery. That is an impossible feat. And that is what happened. And one of the things that the initiatives I'm starting now is for us to shift the narrative of the term Negma War, because it's often something that's quite negative.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But actually, the Negma War were freedom fighters.
Exactly.
You know, they did things like you know, they gave, you know, slave, horrible slave owners their retribution in St. Lucia. These are our hero stories, and we have that. Instead of focusing on people like Admiral Rodney and all of that, we need to be focusing on our Black St. Lucian heroes. So with Know Your Caribbean, I don't think people don't care about our history. It's how you share it.
Right.
It's not about long lectures. And not everyone learns through books. You know, not everyone can engage in a book, and that's fine. You know, we're in 2021. Yeah. You can engage people through videos, through music, through, mm-hmm. you know, photography, through art. And, you know, Know Your Caribbean has been doing really, really well and has actually been my most successful platform. And this shows me that, yes, people do care about their history.
Yes.
Just how, in which we tell our story.
And this is about time we rewrite this history so that we can get the truth about it. Because imagine people are here, and to call someone a Negma War now, they feel offended, only to realize this is mm-hmm. a powerful thing. You know, like, you know, so many
it's
of us.
It's a very powerful
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, some of
it's
us are so lost.
The reason why Negma War is a negative thing is because they wanted to encourage, that's my doorbell, sorry, they wanted to encourage people to stay to work on the plantation. So in order to be a Negma War was seen as a derogatory term, because that was a colonial intention to deter people from stopping to do their work.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, so it's that legacy of that colonial brainwashing has stayed on, and that's why it's still an insult.
Wonderful. Something you've also worked on is the revolution of the fairy tale. And I'm not surprised, I expect
yes.
that from you. Tell us a little bit about that project as well, because what you've done, what this is about, you know, the little stories that we grew up knowing. Oh, the Snow White and the this like that. And we were again, that whole brainwashing, because our story back when we grew up as children having to digest was this, you know, this, mm-hmm. you know, this beautiful white people making, you know, they were the beautiful yes. things to us. And it's the truth. We're talking real here. It's the truth. And that's what we grew up with in our minds. So again, we have this, but what you've done through that little series is to recreate it.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So it's exactly as you said, when you think of like children's books, it's like Snow White, Little Red Riding Hood, Cinderella, and the books yes. are all white people, and you know all the heroes and heroines are all white, and then they're all from Europe.
Yes.
So why is it that us in the Caribbean are here reading these European stories? We have our own.
Exactly.
So it was just basically I was remixing some of the fairy tales, so taking things like The Wizard of Oz and incorporating the Haitian Revolution, which is one of the most important, moments in our Caribbean history.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important for people to understand the significance of the Haitian Revolution and how intertwined we were. And then I also remixed Alice in Wonderland, Snow White, The Little Mermaid, but incorporating Caribbean histories into the story to rewrite it. So, for example, the wizard in The Wizard of Oz is actually Bookman, who was this. The history books call him a voodoo priest, but he was a man who prophesied the Haitian Revolution. So he
wow.
is the wizard. So it's just how it's teaching our history through fairy tales.
Oh my God!
And it's also giving our young people our own heroes to look up to, because you know,
yes.
as you're saying, that our history has been told from the perspective of a white man.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when you look at Solution history, the fact that in terms of how we look at Admiral Rodney, when he was someone who was very much instrumental in ensuring slavery mm-hmm. kept going on in Solution as long as possible, and we have all these monuments named after him, these are things that are just prime examples as to who has autonomy over how we see ourselves. And that is a colonial perspective. And I'm really, really working hard on shifting that narrative.
Right. And your work has not been gone unnoticed. You've garnered quite some awards over the years, including Best Documentary and Best Director for Caribbean Film and Fashion Awards. Tell us about that. I mean, because it's one thing, because this is a challenge, and not very many people like taking on it, because a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of research to put together these things that you're putting in that form. It's a lot of work, and a lot of people prefer not to do it, but you are doing it, and you're putting in the work. So it must feel good to know that work is not going in unnoticed. So tell me how about those awards and how it makes you feel.
You feel very, to be honest, when I win stuff or when people tell me nice things, I get very embarrassed. like I want to go and hide. A friend of mine who's an artist as well, she just finished doing this major project, and she's getting all of this hype and people sending her so much love, and you know, and then she called me and she said, I feel very vulnerable and exposed.
Right.
And I think that's how I feel a lot of the time when people, like if I win something and stuff like that. Of course, winning something like Best Director and Best Documentary is, not to sound cliche, it's very humbling, because
yes.
you never think, as a creative, you never think you deserve them, these kind of things. You just do it because you love it. You
mm-hmm.
do it because you just want to create something.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I wasn't making stuff, creating stuff, I'm always in the process of creating something. If I'm not doing it, I it's almost like I'm not breathing.
Right.
It's almost like I'm not alive. So it's more for that than to win awards. Of course, winning awards is amazing. If it helps to bring more visibility to the intention of the project,
great,
wonderful. But yeah, I do feel a way when I get stuff. Yeah,
like Spice, I feel a way. Let's talk. We don't have much time left. We have 4 minutes left, Fee. So let's talk about, I guess we have to have you here for a whole day. But let's talk now about what it is that some of the things that you would hope to leave. Because I know you're passionate. You can feel the passion. And there's a lot more to be done. I mean, you've done quite a lot. But there's so much more to be done. Because we have a whole history, a whole life, a whole globe to re-revolutionize. And, when you do leave this earth, what would be some of the things that you would have loved to have effected? affected, some of the change mindset, some of the patterns you would have loved to have affected change in?
I think two things. I think in terms of just us supporting artists and creatives, because, you know, as you say, art, us without art is just air, if you just look at the spelling. And I mean, artists, we are the life givers. And, you know, I think for Tanusha especially, I would just love to see us give more love to our artists who are creatives, all the painters, sculptors, dancers, you know, performers, seamstresses, costume designers, and, you know, for them to be paid accordingly and for their trade to be respected as a real profession, not just a hobby. Right. I think that's something I really like to kind of push, you know, a lot. But also, I think in terms of just us undoing a lot of the colonial teachings, I think that has been really, really detrimental to how we see ourselves, how we value ourselves, our relationship with tourism, you know, in terms of our own self-worth and value, in terms of selling land, you know, and, you know, almost kind of giving ourselves away to the West. Yeah. And then we are left with very little for our own. I think one of the things my father was really, really, really passionate about was for us to not to sell our land, for us to have ownership of our own country, mm-hmm. and to not have this dependency on the outside. And I think that all of that comes from us undoing that colonial dependency and kind of looking up to, you know, all of these people outside, because we are, you know, we are like the solution of the Caribbean. Like, we have so much value. Everybody wants to be us. Everybody wants to have
exactly.
what we have. Why are we
exactly.
giving it away?
Exactly.
Why?
And why are we
you
hiding
know?
For it? Why are we? It's sort of like the mentality that made us feel the key will be there to open the lock to the cage we're in, and there will be the daily bread. So we were taught to reach for the daily bread instead of taking the key and just give ourselves the freedom. You know that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly.
Oh, this is amazing.
Exactly
stuff.
That.
Exactly. Well, listen, Fifi, we could talk for the whole day, but in wrapping up, I am seeing a movie. I don't know. I think I see you, you know, directing your own film in the future. Is that something you've been thinking about?
Oh, yeah. The Negma War film is going to be so epic, right?
Right.
So epic on how the Negma War liberated Tanusha from slavery for 3 whole years. Mm. People like Flor and Lacroix. And all of these Tanushan heroes that we don't know about, that's what the film is going to be.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to that. And you continue your drive. It's not an easy thing. Just before you wrap up, you want to leave some encouragement with us. Of course, your life journey is a lot. And like you said, you're humbling. And some of the things that you... But you must have faced some sort of challenges along the way. So just talk to us a little bit about that. And you know, break that cycle that in people's mind, they think, oh, these are the Comptons. They don't have issues. So let them know that you have issues just like any other person and how you overcome it. And leave a little word with our listeners, especially... the artists who are listening and probably, you know, at that point, because like you said, it's very difficult for artists. They don't get the kind of respect that they need, and they probably might be, you know, tempted to give up. So give them a little encouragement for me.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Well, for one, being here in London and stuff like that, who is John Compton?
Exactly.
Who is Prime Minister's daughter? Nobody cares about that. It's a very dog-eat-dog kind of world, so those kind of things do not matter. And I really do not like announcing who my father is anyways, because I don't want people to befriend me, value me, or anything on the basis of who my father is. You have to know Fiona, not Compton's daughter.
Right.
That's very, very important to me. In terms of the difficulties, my main difficulties have been myself in terms of self-doubt, in terms of, you know, not charging enough, not setting my price. A lot of us creatives, we charge too little, and this is why we pay too little. And this is why collectively they have that thing called the starving artist. You know, it's because we are very shy, because we don't have that kind of self-belief. And then it allows people to, oh, let me kind of hire you and I'll give you some exposure on my Instagram.
Right.
Or, you know, I'll give you a favor, I'll give you free drinks, I'll give you a plate of food. You never walk into a lawyer's office and say, could you do these documents for me? I'll buy you a crate of beds. You never
exactly.
do that.
Exactly, exactly.
No, you respect that. So collectively as artists, we really do have to support each other. and band together and do not be afraid to set your price because, yes. You know what, Kripov Membet, she said something to me the other day, she read, it said, being broke, it's all good to be a creative and broke, but being broke can buy you nothing. Right, and it said at least having money can get you something. I'm not phrasing it correctly, but basically what it's saying is we have to stop romanticizing the whole starving artist thing because you cannot harness your art, you cannot feed yourself without being paid. True. And people need to understand that it's not a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, we all like to go to FET and hear Tedison John sing, but if you don't pay Tedison's band. Mm-hmm. You know it's not going to be as good.
Exactly.
We want certain things without wanting to pay for it, and we have to kind of bring that respect. So I just want to encourage artists to, you know, I think I wasted a lot of years doubting myself.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I could have gotten way further if I stopped doubting myself.
Right.
And please do not be afraid to set your price.
Absolutely. Fiona, you are an awesome, awesome young lady. And you know what? All the praises I give you this morning, take it, swallow it, it's yours.
You see, I'm still trying. Big hard back like me, I'm still trying.
No, it's all good. Because you see, that's what happens when you do something from the heart. You don't expect that to come. But you know what? You have to overcome that. You don't have to let it get to your head. And I know it will never get to your head. But you have to understand that you have been very instrumental and you are admired. And the work that you're doing is not simple. You know, it is not simple at all. It is very, very crucial, and you have taken up the mantle and you're doing an awesome job of it. So you need to take some credit for that. Thank you again so much
for joining us.
It was an honor to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Hopefully we speak again soon, but you enjoy and you'll
yes,
be good now.
Definitely.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thanks again.
Thanks, Fifi. All right. So guys, for those of you who are listening, of course, this is where we wrap up She Speaks for yet another awesome day. I always look forward to Tuesdays. This was a beautiful conversation this morning. I really wanted to have that conversation and I am happy that we got it. Thanks, Tammy. Thanks, Roy, for putting this together. And you see why? Because you see, people like that we need. We need to hear from people like that. We need to feel their passion. Because, you know, for too long, we've been in this box that they put us in, where we think certain way and we think we're supposed to be certain thing. And we don't understand that if we were to step out of this box, how revolutionary that will be to set our minds free. Let's stop just drinking what they give us and let's start looking at things objectively and start taking steps towards empowering ourselves. Fiona is about that and I love that we had it this morning. A word from the Bank of St. Lucia. These are our partners. Thank you again to the Bank of St. Lucia and we will be back after this.